This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Welcome to the My Old Man Said podcast. I'm David Michael, the editor of myoldmansaid.com. Joining me for a show that's flipped on its head. The one we intended to record was all about celebrating Dean Smith being the fifth longest serving manager in the Premier League and celebrating that fifth position with five consecutive losses. But alas, we have now evolved into a Dean Smith out episode. Joining me to discuss that and more, Mr. Chris Budd.
Hello.
Mr. Phil Shaw.
Hello.
And we've managed to find an old hair of Dan Rogers in one of the microphones, and we've managed to clone him. And he was the man in the Christmas episode that prophesied a 10-game losing streak. So let's get him on to discuss that. Welcome back, Mr. Rogers.
Hello, Villa chums. There's nothing more you know than the Villa Underground loves a good crisis. I'm here. I've arrived for the wake. Just Bud, have you prepared the sandwiches and pickled onions? I am
have
here.
Have you brought the Christmas jumpers?
The Christmas jumpers. Have you brought the bongos?
I have.
It's good to be back, everyone. It's good to be back. Five defeats is nothing. I was holding out for 10, 15, 20.
But it does feel like a wake where we've got old friends around to say, have you got a little passage ready?
No. I didn't in the first take, nor in the second.
I thought you might be reading from the Fables of Al Ghazi, passage 10.8 or something.
I'm reading from the Book of Samson.
Oh.
the Matthew Burson impersonator, yes.
Oh, dear. Well, we will stick to the normal format of the show, and obviously the Dean Smith leaving the club or being sacked, more to the point, will obviously be a shadow that casts itself large over the proceedings. But we'll also, because it's the international break, we'll also have a show specifically talking about the Dean Smith situation, the 360 degrees of what went wrong, why he left, and why he left. Was it the right choice? What's going to happen next? Have Villa dropped a bollock since he was very much part of the new regime and they had very much invested in him as their man and the face of the new revolution, and didn't last very long and never got going, really. But as we say, that would obviously inform the conversation going forward. But also, we'll go through the Villa news, the 3 points. Mr. Shaw will serve us up with the latest Media Muppet offerings before we talk about the Saints, the last game that Dean Smith was in charge of Aston Villa for. So, Dan, how are you? Quickly, welcome back.
It's
been a long time since our... was it the Christmas special?
Yes, that's when I, like the Grim Reaper, made my Prophet of Doom prediction. and so it has transpired. But I take no pleasure in saying that, you bit.
Well, we're halfway there. I mean, to be honest with you, I was saying to you guys before the start of the show, if Brighton scored the first goal against Villa at Villa Park, then considering, you know, how defensively sound they are, the next game's away at Crystal Palace, who aren't easy to beat at all. Then it's Manchester City, Leicester, Liverpool. I'm potentially lumping on for another five losses there. It's a bit of an accumulator in the making there.
What are you saying? We should lump on, David?
That's not financial advice. It's just a... The sounds of a concerned Villa fan. Right, let's get into it. Right, let's start off with some Villa news. First thing, Villa news, Dean Smith was sacked. Second thing, international break. Leon Bailey is off to Jamaica. Bit of a two-sided coin here. Good for him to actually get some games under his belt, because he's not at the races, is he, at all? The problem is, there's a high probability that he'll come back injured, no doubt. Douglas Luiz is not in the Brazil squad due to his ongoing injury, which seems to have been kind of made light of, hasn't it? Nobody's really singled in on that one. Because he was having a relatively okay season so far.
He'd been steady, hadn't he?
You can't really say that about a lot of our players. Sanson is not in the French squad, but that's more about his ability than his fitness. Mings in the England squad, despite being dropped by Smith. Watkins doesn't get a berth, as probably expected. The only other things of note, January, some additional TV fixtures have been added to Villa's calendar. The Manchester United game has, although it takes place on the same day, January the 15th, Saturday, it's been moved back to a 5:30 kickoff. Villa's trip to Goodison will now be a 12:30 kickoff on the Saturday. I'm sure away fans are very happy about that. Meaning they're going to have to get up the crack of dawn for that one. While the trip to Brentford will be also broadcast, and that is now 2:00 on the Sunday. A little bit of fallout from the Saints game. I don't think this has anything to do with Dean Smith or whatever. It's just a bunch of pricks starting fights. This is what we were talking about earlier on. I think the police were saying after the pandemic, there was a lot of, let's say, younger fans who were going like either with their parents or not at all. And then suddenly they were 2 years older and they were drinking age after the pandemic. And then suddenly there were these fans that just didn't know how to fucking behave or didn't know the protocol of going to games. And I think that's still causing a lot of problems. Meanwhile, the Villa women... a reasonably gutsy performance against Chelsea, who are one of the best women's team in Europe, losing 1-0. And they now find themselves very much in mid-table after six or so games. Actually, they're above Manchester City, which is saying something. What's happened to Manchester City? They've lost three games out of five.
I have no idea.
It's a mystery. Right, I think it's time for Media Muppets. Right then, Mr. Shaw, what's in the Media Muppet trough this week? Well, so much. We had to buy a bigger trough.
We did, it overfloweth, but then we tipped it out and we just went with the recent stuff. So we actually have Dean Smith's last words as Villa manager. And no, it wasn't fuck off, Christian. apparently, according to the Birmingham Mail, our old friends, our old Muppet providers, the last words...
I thought his last words, is it all right if I get the job at Norwich then?
No, they're saying his last words were, it's disappointing. But if you click into it, and please don't, this is actually just his last press conference, dressed up to be a new comment. So they just proceeded to copy and paste their previous piece on Smith after the Saints game.
This should be illegal still. It's so disingenuous and misleading. It should be illegal.
Yeah, and just to show they know no more than the rest of us, they said Perslow would use the international break to speak to potential new managers only if Smith couldn't turn it round. So the actual comment from them was, Villa CEO Perslow is now set to use his two-week international break as a chance to speak with potential new bosses should Smith's hapless losing streak continue at Villa Park. So no, they didn't wait on that at all.
So they've just carved up the previous article and twisted it.
Yeah, carved up the previous article and twisted it. And then there's more articles coming every second out of it saying how Smith fought his corner as if they were in the room behind him, you know, like they're in Canelo's corner or something like that at the weekend.
I mean, I always remember one of these Football Supporters Association awards sitting next to, is it Jonathan Liu, who used to write for The Independent, went to The Guardian. And we were talking about local press coverage and mentioned how what had been happening, you know, specifically, I mean, it's the same across the board, all these Reach publications and the whole clickbait model. And he said, oh, is that the way they cover Aston Villa? He said, ah, that's disappointing, isn't it? Because there is a choice, but at the end of the day, they're just going for the numbers and nobody's got the balls to actually stand up. Who's clicking on it?
That's what I don't get now.
Well, this is the thing. I mean, you know, we can sit here bagging out the Birmingham Mail, but if it works, that just means there's a load of numpties clicking on it and falling for it time and time and time again.
It's literally
addicted to heroin or fentanyl.
Yeah, fentanyl.
So, I mean, it takes two to tango, doesn't it, when it comes to clickbait? Have some self-respect, people. Right, into the 3 points. First one, safe standing. UK's football police lead Mark Roberts has described a two-decade-long campaign for safe standing as a headlong rush. What does he mean by that?
He's saying it's poorly thought out, even though they spent two decades trying to, you know, get it into place.
I mean, since my old man started over 10 years ago, I remember going to the House of Commons and, you know, hearing MPs hold a like a think tank there and basically to educate other MPs on what the issue is and why it's time for a change. And I remember I asked the last question to the MPs and I said, what is the timeline on this? And the answer was so wishy-washy, I just thought, oh, this is going to take fucking ages.
Well, the next step would be for the government to allow a trial to go forward. Do I have a timeline in my head? No, this campaign has been going on for some time.
Well, Mr. Michael, we've got to leave Europe first. And
So the idea that this chap from the police has said it's a headlong rush is bordering on ridiculous. And anybody can see with that rail in front of your seat in these rail seats, it's more safer than actually seating at the moment.
Yeah, completely agree.
So it's a no-brainer. So at the moment, as it starts at January the 1st, five clubs, Spurs, Chelsea, Cardiff and the two Manchester clubs have applied to the Sports Ground Safety Authority for a licence. I think they are fine now with the actual infrastructure in terms of the seat design. So I don't know who's dragging the heels now, but you know, you look at the Wolves, you look at Spurs, and the seats are there. Manchester United, Liverpool and Villa, who were first on the bandwagon in terms of safe standing, and there was a lot of press around that, are actually nowhere to be seen in this conversation in recent years. So, which is a bit of a shame considering we had the biggest single standing cop in Europe at one stage before it got knocked down and converted into a two-part seating arrangement. But let's see, I think Villa essentially have to redevelop their stadium. Luckily, the season ticket waiting list is it's like almost 100,000 now, isn't it?
It's going up by the minute.
Yep.
Doesn't matter about the adversity. Doesn't matter if we're losing games. Doesn't matter if we're sacking managers. It's literally, as we've been speaking about it, it's gone up another 5,000.
I heard they're going to put an entire tier just of rail seats at Villa Park.
If you're clued up, you know that we are trolling on this one, because just from when Dean Smith's mentioned it in press conferences, and then the club have mentioned it, and then the press have mentioned it, it seems to go up by the hour. Every time somebody mentions it, it goes up a ridiculous amount. So we just play along with that joke and add noughts to it. Right, point number two. FIFPro, the World Football Players Union, calls for compulsory breaks to prevent burnout. Now, when I was young, if I had known that you could earn so much money for playing so little games as a footballer, I would have been all over this. I'd have sacked off studying anything else. I'd have just made sure I turned out to be a professional footballer. You don't have to play cup games anymore. You kind of get rotated in the league because they don't want you to get tired. Easiest job in the world in terms of the minutes you have to put in. What do they mean by breaks exactly?
They're looking to bring in compulsory breaks to miss a game, to miss a whole game if the player plays three games of at least 45 minutes in what they call the critical zone. So the effort zone, I don't know. I haven't seen effort in a while, so I don't know what it looks like.
Well, I mean, let's just say when Aston Villa won the league the last time, they only needed 14 players. That's when men were men.
But there is one strange anomaly in this. They've done a study, and it's based on 40,000 appearances from a sample of 265 players between June 2018 and August 21. They say players at national team level, 67% of their minutes in the 2020-2021 season were played at the critical zone, which was up from 61%, and that was behind locked doors. So they put more effort in behind closed doors.
I mean, you do these stats and then you look at the touch count after these games and players have had like 25 touches and you think, this is just glorified running around, isn't it?
We're getting awfully close to the Scott Hogan touch count meter here.
Yeah, I don't know about burnt out. I mean, it seems that players play less and less and earn more and more. That's the way the equation goes nowadays.
Yeah, nurses are burnt out. Professional exactly. Footballers are not. I'm happy to stick my neck out on this one.
Exactly. Point number three, the second season has begun. Spurs, Norwich, Villa, all already axing their men. Spurs did a good job to get out front of the pack, really, because they got the only kind of half-decent manager available. The others are fucked. But meanwhile, over to the southeast coast, Mr. Stanley Victor Collymore has become Southend, where he had a season, I think under Colin Murphy, who used to be the manager of Lincoln. He's their first senior football strategist. This covers basically working across and supporting the club across the football department's commercial media, and also the supporters trust. From the interview I watched of him talking about the role, which he was very genuinely happy and excited about. So good on him to actually, get his hands dirty in football again, because, you know, pundits are pundits. And I think he's one of the better pundits in terms of approaching it right across the board from the fans to the player point of view. So in terms of the job, it's one of those sticky ones where people's egos get in the way and people just stand on each other's toes. And while the intentions are good at the start, these things, just due to human nature, can turn a bit sour. But hopefully he won't have to experience that. You should go and watch his intro video. A happy man. It's rare to be seen nowadays.
I'm happy to be here.
What are you helping us with? Basically, the forthcoming 10-game losing streak and trying to get over Dean Smith getting sacked. Right, on to the Saints game, which apparently was the trigger. When a manager hasn't, let's say the results aren't going for them, this like, oh, if you don't win this game, he should be out. Or if he loses this game, he's out. This kind of is almost like fans judging a manager's future on just one game. It's kind of bizarre. I think Norwich, for example, took a period of games. This, what is this? The 10th game. So they probably thought, right, we'll judge it on 10 games. And even though he won the 10th game, it's like, well, overall, you know, not good enough. But this kind of pressure on one game, it doesn't really solve anything, does it?
Singularly, it doesn't tell you anything other than it's just a barometer for when does your patience run out. I mean, we were awful though.
Well, I thought the second half we weren't too bad. I mean, the irony of this, we went to St. Mary's last season, we won 1-0, but we had more possession this time. We had more shots. When we had 14 shots this time, 8 last time. Last time we had one corner, this time we had 8. So I don't think overall we were as bad as we were the season before. The difference is, I think, this season and last season is just we had a defence last season that could kind of carry us through these shady times.
Yeah, and I don't know what we'll have this season at the back. I mean, it was clear from the first goal in the Southampton game. It's just ball broke in the middle, it went high, and then it's just hesitation. It's like they don't think that anything's going to go wrong. They don't know what's going to go wrong. It just drops to Armstrong, the Southampton player, and you know, 9 times out of 10, he's putting that in the stands, but this time he catches it perfectly and it's into the net, and then from then on, it's an uphill struggle.
Heads drop quickly, and of course they clearly didn't get the message, or maybe they did get the message. I'm not quite sure which way you want to put it, but
they got the message on a piece of paper, Chris. It was clear. Game you're watching,
like the,
man.
It was rustling like the back of the net.
Yeah,
there's a couple of things here. One, I've been fairly chilled about this situation. I mean, I watched a local the press guy where he seemed to be having a nervous breakdown in a budget Ibis or whatever, wherever he was, and I'm just thinking, well, just you know, come on. This is the guy that everybody's invested in, and he's very much integral to this new revolution of the Purslow, the Wes Edens and Suarez. I mean, when we had a poor run going back a season or two, I mean, I asked Purslow about the situation and what he considers progress and his kind of tolerance levels or whatever, and he was very, very bullish about Smith. So this is a failure on their part, you know, make no mistake about that. So I'm very surprised that they pulled the trigger so quickly. I thought they'd give him the end of this month and then take it from there, because December gets a bit nasty. But the thing is, I mean, that note, when I saw that, I thought, what the fuck is going on here?
It was very Sunday league, wasn't it?
Because yeah. I'm thinking, this team knew what it was doing defensively, and if they didn't, they wouldn't have got out of that relegation. They were doomed to get relegated that season. But because they managed to sort out the defensive, and we're talking about the whole, you know, midfield and defence, and that carried through to last season, where 15 clean sheets, as we keep saying, only Chelsea and Manchester City could beat that. So you think, if it ain't broke, what's the problem? But these extra coaches with their bloody tweaking and their long throws and overcomplicating things, where you see players actually thinking, oh, what am I meant to do here, rather than just fucking play the game. It's weird. And then they're passing notes and you're just thinking, oh, fuck me. And players don't, you know, players like simple instructions. They don't want it overcomplicating. And it's almost like, is this something that Dean Smith is embracing and preaching, or, you know, what's the story here?
I mean, you saw from the first corner, I mean, everybody ran to the first front post. About 6 Villa players went to the front post, leaving the Saints player right at the back post in his own. It's just lucky that he blazed over.
Yeah, it should have been 2 or 3 at half time, I would say. Martinez obviously kept us in it.
But that's been the theme. That's been the theme all season. It's easy to just keep deferring back to all of 2021. I felt these problems predate Grealish leaving, which is, I think, a bit of a lazy...
Yeah,
lazy thing that people say. I think Smith fell into a couple of traps. One was desperately trying to hold on to his way of doing things, and I thought that was as clear as day against Southampton, West Ham, Arsenal.
What is his way of doing things?
His way of doing things. He never fully established a style. That was my angle on this. That we were sold this idea that Smith was an attacking, free flowing kind of football under Brentford. That I never thought we saw develop under Villa. I think there were flashes of it, like the 7-2 against Liverpool and whatnot.
We would get beat by Brentford, by Dean Smith's Brentford. And then when it came to the day that people were saying, oh, we're going to get Dean Smith in, I mean, half he's a Villa fan, but B, just from our experiences of getting beaten by Brentford every time, but actually beaten in a, you know, they were played as off
the
park.
Became a bogey team for us. And just to round off where I think that his intentions, if you like, collided with where we were at, is he became, we were stubborn in one sense, especially in game, but then we started tinkering, and the tinkering with the defence, I think, opened us up massively game after game after game. And then, as you say, an almost obsession with this set piece notion that, you know, they're just fundamental parts of the game that you'd need to do well. You don't need to over-engineer things. Football isn't complicated. You know, especially when we signed players like Watkins last season and we saw how they played, it was an uncomplicated but very effective style.
Just to track back to the evolution of the Smith style, I mean, initially the mantra was, if we're 1-0 up, we're going for the second goal. And everybody was like, whoa, clinking glasses and... like the bravado of it. But I mean, we said many times on the show, this stinks of naivety.
Yeah.
I mean, the Championship's kind of a bit of a strange one, because we scraped into the playoffs. But in that first season, we were heading down. And it was only when they addressed getting the balance right, and Smith did admit this in his interviews, etc., that, you know, this kind of gung-ho approach obviously wasn't really working in the Premier League because you didn't really have a team to sustain it. And it's like, no, you've got to be a bit more pragmatic. But they found that and they got the balance right. And, you know, I think I remember myself saying they kind of hit a sweet spot. And then when we got into the start of last season, gave Grealish some proper support in Barkley, and that defensive structure, the solidity continued and gave them the foundations to kick on. And at that point, you thought, right, Smith here has learnt with that kind of attacking mindset, but with a solid base now, this is a team that could go somewhere. And then we started beating Arsenal, we started beating Liverpool, and you thought, we actually go toe-to-toe with the big guns now, and we actually, you know, frighten them.
And we were solid. You know, we went to, you know, Leicester won 1-0 away, Wolves, Leeds, Southampton. There was a few games like that. The Arsenal one where we were resilient. You know, we could, if we scored first, you thought, well, we won't lose this today now.
Yeah, and, you know, you only have to go back a couple of seasons. So if we had a lead going in with 10 minutes to go, you'd shit the bed because you knew it was going, they were going to score at least one goal.
Yeah.
Then we'd lost Grealish. But then also what's forgotten, we lost Barkley. And the two guys that gave us that fear factor, any team would look at us and go, oh, fuck, they've got Grealish and Barkley and they're both playing well. That fear factor disappeared and suddenly those players were looking around. They don't see Grealish, they don't see Barkley, and they were bereft of ideas. And whether that's a leadership issue from Smith or if they haven't recruited the best, you know, a good depth of player and a bit of bad luck as well on the injury front.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Yeah, and I think, you know, keeping the focus maybe on Southampton, I think that there was a... It summed up in over 90 minutes exactly where we'd come unstuck on a number of those points that you just listed, really, that we didn't have that fear factor. You know, the second half was improved, but only because the first half was so bad. We were lucky not to be going in at, you know, easily 3-0 down. But even in the second half, we created nothing. We built no sense of tempo. You know,
it's like just like the Arsenal game, half against Arsenal.
It was, and no slight on Southampton. I think that they're improved, if you like, as a football club, but they're by no means amongst the best in the division. I thought it was equally as scary against, as you guys have already said, against an organised West Ham team. Because you think, well, you know, what didn't we know going into some of these games? And I think this is where I just wasn't surprised how you knew what the result was going to be after 55 minutes against Southampton. You know, we weren't building up any head of steam, and then you see Keenan Davis emerge on the touchline, and you think, oh Christ, I've fallen into a time machine where nobody's learnt anything.
In Match Club, I did look at the starting lineup and looked at that bench, and I thought, we just appear weak. If the opponents look at that, they go, three, if we don't get 3 points here, there's something wrong with us.
That's exactly it. You just see the way teams start against us, and it's just like they go great into them. And I mean, it's old school. It's like they just get into them hard. They won't be ready for it. It's like Keystone Cops at the back for the first 10, 15 minutes until Villa sort of calm down.
It's like Arsenal was like first round.
Well, we persevered with this crazy system of you know, wanting Matt Target to be exactly the same as Matty Cash when they're very different footballers, but punishing ourselves week after week after week and exposing ourselves to the same risk. That would form I suppose, part of the things that if you're in Perslow and the other parts of the hierarchy who have ultimately made this call, you think, well, what? We're seeing it every single week. We're being punished every single week. Why are we not learning?
We said this last season from sort of February, March, April. It's the same mistakes every week. Why isn't this being fixed? If it happens once, fair enough. If it happens again, okay. If it happens three, four, five times, it's like, hang on a minute, this is fundamentals now.
I think the only final thing I would say, and it's not to, this is very much around the Southampton game. How many times I think Smith must have perhaps looked at some of the players he would have considered to be more senior, and either he lost them, confused them with the tactics, or they've suffered such chronic dips in form or erratic form. And I would count, you know, I think McGinn's had good moments this season, but I thought against Southampton he really was anonymous at times when...
I mean, let me ask you the question, who had a good game for Villa against Southampton? In terms of, I mean, I'm just talking about like 7 out of 10 effort. Yeah. I mean, I think against West Ham as well, it's the same characters. Yeah. Probably Martinez, Cash.
Cash gets plaudits, I think, because he was absolutely...
playing for his international future.
Yes. He was criminally exposed,
absolutely.
Wasn't he, by Bailey?
This is for Poland! or Polska.
I did notice on their official account they've posted in Polish, obviously, do you like dumplings, son? He's arrived this evening, I think, for instance. Good luck to him. But I think he comes out with some credit, but as Chris just said, only because he's been, you know, he's had to cover some ground, and man, he was left completely exposed with Bailey.
Nakamba came out of both those, the West Ham game and that game, with credit. And what happens? He got took off after... 55 minutes, and that was like, well, that makes no sense. He was your base. You bring people on in front of him because he's the only one that's standing in the right place.
Actually, to be fair to him, Buendia was having a decent game as well, and he got hooked, but he's always wanting to get hooked.
He always gets cramp or tired, doesn't he? He just doesn't look fit enough to play in the Premier League.
He needs that FIFA Pro rule to come in, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does, yeah.
he's already burnt out. Oh, Jesus Christ. I mean, but this is, we'll talk about this in the separate show, but somebody's not doing the due diligence on Buendia and Bailey since they've walked through the door. We needed them from the off. And
it was Lang's list in alphabetical order. He just got to, oh, Buendia, yeah, Bailey, there's two B's. Well, we don't need to go any further. We don't need to go any further down the line here. That'll do.
It's almost like, you know, Lang's left... Smith a big Santa sack of presents from the transfer window, and he's opened them and it's just like empty boxes.
Didn't buy the batteries?
Yeah, he didn't buy the fucking batteries. Yeah. El Ghazi started as well.
And somehow managed to stay on the pitch at half time. That was mind-blowing enough in itself.
Well, at least he can take a penalty. That's what he's trading on.
That's what he's trained for.
I was trying to think of, you know, what is an El Ghazi? I'm not quite sure. It's like an Area 51 type of thing where, you know, you think there's something exciting. Maybe there's a secret weapon inside, but I guess only people who wear tinfoil hats would believe it now. He just doesn't look...
it's just a barren desert in Nevada.
Yeah, it's just not good enough.
Yeah, certainly the players have not helped Smith at all. And this is the dumbfounding thing, is we only just beat Manchester United for the first time for over a decade. That was like 6 weeks ago. That followed a 3-0 win against the then unbeaten Everton. And we knew we had problems in terms of injuries, in terms of poor preparation, but you thought we were, you know, we were getting results.
There were stems of progress, weren't there, at the time?
Perhaps weren't expecting, and you thought, you know, we're on par, we're doing all right here. Yeah. And then suddenly you see that 3-5-2 just get taken apart by the opposition because our fullbacks were so far forward. Yeah. And you're just thinking, if you've just equalised against Spurs, what the fuck are you doing? Like you lock it down and try to snatch, if you're going trying to snatch a win, you snatch it on the break, but you've got to close the space because Son's just going to run amok. And then against Wolves, the same thing, 2-0 up.
Kill the game at that point.
Make the game stale, just kill it off.
Some of this is all obviously with the benefit of hindsight, but you look back now and you think, well, the Man United team's probably, you know, it's not the Manchester United powerhouse of old, and we picked them off.
They whipped Spurs 3-0 after they got
played
wiped out
day,
by Liverpool.
Maybe that's the way to look
day.
At that one, that they're not the, you know, the consistent powerhouse they were.
Well, they've got enough firepower there to fucking beat Villa 15-0.
Ah, but they didn't. We released the house. I don't know, maybe we perhaps... over-egged or over, you know, it masked what some of the more serious problems that have come home to roost in the weeks since. And I think compounded by the tinkering that you mentioned, you know, the formation change. And I don't know. It is funny though. And football does go like that sometimes, that you go from what feel like immense highs to, you know, to lows quite quickly.
Yeah, I'd said in sort of previous shows that Smith just has had a look of a man who's sort of run out of luck anyway, and I think the team has, you know, their confidence has been on the floor. They look very, very cautious in how they played. Certainly that West Ham game, like players like Target, these guys, they looked fearful. It was almost like the decline through sort of the Lambert years where they were so scared to express themselves on the ball, bar fleeting moments. They played very safe, very within themselves. And as Dan said, the tinkering is just, we said, I think it was in the Submit for the Weekend show, that in any organisation, in any kind of business, if you've had a massive transition, like you've lost your Grealish, your talisman figure, Barkley's gone, who was his sort of his right-hand man. You've lost two senior members of coaching staff as well. That's a big overhaul. Don't start changing the system and don't let's not have even bigger transitions.
Let's not forget Grealish. We've had plenty of practice for playing months without Grealish, because he's been missing a third of like four out of the last five seasons. So I kept echoing that on the podcast over the years.
You miss Grealish, but he's not there. But the sort of tactic or the style of play doesn't change. You're still getting it to that final three quarters, and you're expecting whoever you land it with to do something special. And there's no like cohesive plan to make it work without them.
Check this out. So Chris was talking about the kind of fear and the confidence. So Villa, back in the Premier League, doing start of the season, whatever. But then it's looking by February that we potentially are in the shit here. Pandemic comes along. Project restart starts behind closed doors. We manage to survive. We're stringing wins together. We survive next season behind closed doors. Start amazingly, no crowd. Then it's getting to the second half of the season. There's talk that the crowd might come back.
I see where you're going with this.
suddenly the form drops. Somehow, I don't know how they managed to beat Spurs and Chelsea at the end, but you know, not full crowds there. And then the crowd's back this season, and some of the players are unrecognisable from, let's say, behind closed door situations. There was a lot of talk about certain players being training ground players.
Yes, it's a very good point.
Used to be a regular topic on this show. And normally when people say training ground players, I mean they're really good in training, but put them in front of the crowd and they freeze. And I think there's a little bit of that.
There is the obvious one, and it's not, you know, this isn't a scapegoating comment I'm about to make, but it is glaring how different Matt Target is in that scenario. And I found his post-match interview really uncomfortable viewing, I must admit. I know it's been badged as a real insight into, and clearly the guy cares about his performances and the Villa are struggling. But
it was badged to get some sympathy, wasn't it?
That's not how it landed for me. It's almost one of those where you think, does this guy need to be taken out of the team for his own benefit?
Yes, put him out of his misery. You know, on the last show I said, it's kind of been brushed over, but he scored what are essentially own goals, two own goals that cost us games, and then he gave away a penalty, which was the fundamental moment that fucked us on the Arsenal game. So that was three games on the trot. That, let's say, it was the killer blow that he was contributing or helping to contribute.
He just hasn't recovered from that first game of the season, has he? And that meant he hooked at half time. That was, you saw then.
He got destroyed, didn't he?
Yeah.
He got an injury over the summer, didn't he? And he just looked underprepared, having been probably one of our best players the season before.
But if you wonder, if Target is he's been put up and fronted up as a, you know, I think it was Mings as well, also was in front of the cameras after the Southampton game. If Target was, was the most upbeat person willing to stick their hand up, wouldn't, you think, well, is this a prism into the Villa squad of how the current, what the current confidence mindset is and confidence? And because it wasn't a, reflective, we've been really poor, but, being a bit more upbeat about it, it was a depressing, somber interview.
Yeah, and also Dean Smith, who, when he started managing Villa, you kind of enjoyed his press conferences and his interviews. And then recently you've kind of got in that zone where you just like...
They all sound the same.
Is it Greta Thunberg, her chant at this...
COP26.
Yeah, the COP26. No more, blah, blah, blah. No more, blah, blah, blah. You start to feel like that.
I thought you were going down a different route then, Devin. I thought you were going to go, you stole my childhood.
This podcast has stolen our souls.
I think Aston Villa has done that for a lot of people who are, I would say, teenagers or late teenagers, when you factor in the last 10 years or so. This is the problem now. We are now turning around and looking back and being drawn back to...
We know what's down that road. That's the trouble is, we know.
Yeah, we know. Purse slow, don't go
and
back
that's the fear.
There.
That's what drives this, that you know, they're driving away or walking away from St Mary's going, you know, it's not that long ago we were missing penalties against Preston North End. it's very raw and it's very fresh, and it's easy to have a lot of sentiment for a manager like Smith. But at the same time, and Villa are no exception to this, we're paralysed by the fear of relegation.
I mean, the new revolution was the new owners. Purslow with Smith was their man. They had the Grealish, the poster boy. They slapped them both on the side of the
down,
North Stand.
Another bit on the patchwork quilt to do tomorrow morning.
My old man said, well, me personally, it's always the ambition is Aston Villa should be up there fighting for Europe and, you know, having a go to try to win a cup, because traditionally, historically, we are silverware winners. That said, there's a status quo and there's that Super League 6 or whatever, and to penetrate that in the modern game with all their riches and the imbalance that the Champions League causes now, once those teams are in it and they have access to revenue far and beyond, you know, what Villa could be pulling in, unless they get into those places. And that is the goal for the owners. And Purslow has, you know, stated that. So you thought to break this cartel, you've got to come up with something new and different and have your own thing. You can't just get the latest manager who, you know, who does the rounds, because it is a bit of a merry-go-round, because you're not getting a manager that's really invested in your club. You know, he's just thinking about the money, first of all, and then, you know, he'll be there for a couple of years and off he goes. But with Smith, you thought, this is actually a chance for some legacy here. So this is probably the best chance we've got here. You've got, like, passion within...
And a chance for some real identity, like an original identity.
And you've got a manager who has managed to get Villa beating the champions 7-2, beating Arsenal 3-0 on their patch, destroying them. And even with a mixed bag of what's happened this calendar year, we've managed to beat, in the last year, 5 of those 6 clubs that we have to usurp. So you're thinking, all right, this guy has got something to take us to the level we need to be. The problem is, though, he's not consistent and he can go on these streaky runs, and he's, you know, he's got bad patches to his name. So at this stage, you know, having had 5 losses, I'm thinking, well, the thing about Smith is he has these bad patches and he shouldn't do, and that's, you know, quite frankly, it's not good enough, but at the same time, he can get you out of them. So at this point in time, what's our best bet here? I think it was with Smith when he got his players back. They've never started all together. The 3 guys that Purslow says were bought to replace Grealish in the aggregate. And that's astounding that in 10 games, that the 3 players that were served up as the main chief reason to improve this club and also replace the talisman, for want of a better word, and they can't even start together. This is not just on Smith. I think this is the whole thing. I mean,
what, higher up the food chain?
I'm talking about recruitment. I'm talking about coaching staff. I mean, Nanny McPhee, if he's still around.
Coaching situation has been dreadful as far as I'm concerned.
Shakespeare's gone. I don't know what the Anderlecht guy's all about.
Aaron Dank.
But they're not singing from the same hymn sheet. They're not a cohesive unit.
That's a good point. And it didn't seem a cohesive unit even with the appointments, really. And I must admit, with Shakespeare I had to admit was standing behind Smith the other night. I thought, well, maybe that's the caretaker manager there. You did wonder.
Well, everybody thought he was the insurance policy.
And so that's interesting, because I think the plans of Purslow and Langer are great when things are going well, aren't they? And again, they were sitting in the stands in the shadows at St Mary's, where again you thought, oh, hang on.
Well, you know, Nanny McPhee, there's that flick on header from a long throw, Danny Ings bicycle kick, Nanny McPhee's in the second coming of Christ Twitter. We're signing these 30 million players, Danny Ings, Buendia, Pippin, Arsenal to Buendia, Lang's the second coming. But all of these things have just defaulted, haven't they? And there's got to be more responsibility than just Smith.
Well, they seem out of sync, and that's why that manifests itself into the performances, doesn't it? That we became, you know, obsessed with things other than what we needed to be, which was you know, actually sticking to the things that had brought us success, promotion, kept us in the division and scared the opposition in our second season in the league. And we departed from all of those things massively, not least with the coaching staff a week before the season started.
Sure. Right. Well, we're going to deep dive on the Smith situation in a separate show. We're just going to finish off the show. Stat of the game, Phil, have you got anything for me?
Southampton's third minute winner, which was actually 2 minutes and 15 seconds, was the earliest goal Aston Villa have ever conceded in the Premier League and gone on to lose the game 1-0.
Yeah, they never looked like scoring, did they? I mean, they improved second half, but you just felt there's no way they're getting anything.
To be fair,
from
we
this.
Kept a clean sheet for 95 minutes.
Progress. So he finally worked out how to keep a clean sheet again and got booted. Right, this is a bit of the show that I don't think Dan has been involved with before.
Oh, he loved it.
It's had various changes in terms of the punishment, but we're going to go back to the original. If you had to line up the 11 starters for Aston Villa against the Saints and shoot one of them, who would you shoot?
Couldn't we have just strapped somebody to a rocket and gone with the fireworks night theme?
Yeah, I'll start again. Who are you going to strap to a rocket? And it's going to be a big rocket, like a mega cock. I was once at a stag do, you know, where we, you know, clay pigeon shoot and all that kind of shit, and stayed in this country house. And we got loads of fireworks in, and one of them was the biggest rocket you've ever seen. And just spontaneously, everybody there started, as the guy was putting it down to start to light it, everybody in a kind of Wicker Man tribal, everybody at the same time was like, synced perfectly. Everybody started going, mega cock, mega cock, mega cock.
Right.
Like it was some kind of cult or something.
You stumbled into the wrong country house party.
Yeah. It doesn't sound like Crinkly Bottom, does it?
So who we're connecting to the mega cock?
Well,
and firing off into space.
It's quite simple. I would strap El Ghazi to that rocket after 45 minutes at the St. Mary's. And
that was pitiful, wasn't it?
Fired to the edge of the universe.
I think it's over for him, isn't it? It's one of those players where you think he can do it. It's just something missing from his game.
New manager and a bit of
missing a brain. It's absent. It's hollow.
Well, talking about that, I'm strapping Keenan Davis to it. I know he only came onto the pitch, but he robbed me of so much hope for an equaliser that just by even seeing him step onto the pitch, that was it.
I'm trying to think what job he would have if he wasn't a footballer. What, you know, across time, and I just imagine his. He'd have been responsible for calculating lifeboat spaces on the Titanic. That sort of type of pointlessness.
The bottom line is he was off on loan to Stoke, and obviously his injury curtailed that move. And here we are in our hour of need, and Smith's in his hour of need, and that's what his future is resting on.
Can I strap Nanny McPhee to the rocket?
Ooh. Wow.
Technically, it has to be a first 11 player.
Can we not make an exception for this one?
No.
I'm going to go with... I'm going to go with El Ghazi as well.
It's a double-ended rocket.
Oh, God.
This is a mega cock that's going to split him into two.
Oh, dear. Oh, dear. Oh, dear.
Oh, sorry. Smut alert, smut alert. I think we should move
Probably
on.
Best.
Right, we're going to do a Dean Smith special show where we get into this deeper and come up with revelations that you've never heard of in your life before. Before that, I want to say a big thank you to the My Old Man Said patrons, and also to everybody who joined us in Match Club on the night, Friday night of the Saints game, to hold hands and share the experience of Dean Smith's last game. So thank you for joining us in that. And also thank you to the new My Old Man Said patrons, Andy Chance, Alan Rose, Jim Power, James, also Colin Curry for renewing as well, and Kev Berry for becoming an annual subscriber. If you become an annual subscriber, you get 2 months off free, which is about 15% off. So if you want to get extra podcasts, and most of all, join Match Club. It's going to be an interesting one for the rest of this season. Please do go to myoldmansaid.com. Click on the Patreon link on the menu. If you're on a mobile device, it's the menu thing is those three lateral lines, and that you'll see the patrons when you press that. Thank you very much. Right. Don't forget to follow the podcast on Twitter at @MyOldManSaid and also on Instagram at @MyOldManSaid and also on Facebook at @MyOldManSaid and follow it on whatever podcast apps you are listening to. So you get a notification when the Smith Out show pops up as well. Right, gents, any final words?
It's good to be back. Nothing's changed. If anything, it's worse. I know what you called.
It's like the bat phone.
It is a giant hot dog in the sky.
Phil?
No.
Chris?
No.
Oh, crikey. Like,
right, it's goodbye from me and it's goodbye from them.
Goodbye.
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 Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.